Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker, and tonight it's up to Hillary Clinton. After 3 days of hearing from citizens, celebrities, and politicians, including President Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and former President Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton will tell her story at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Last night, President Obama urged the crowd to carry on his legacy by supporting Clinton.
It's been you who fueled my dogged faith in our future, even when the odds were great, even when the road is long. Hope in the face of difficulty. Hope in the face of uncertainty. The audacity of hope. America, you've vindicated that hope these past 8 years.
And joining us from Philadelphia is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Hi there, Anthony.
Hey, Deb. Greetings from Philadelphia.
Greetings. Well, we'll talk about last night in just a minute, including that 44-minute-long speech from the president that's left some of us bleary-eyed this morning. But let's talk first about what Hillary Clinton needs to do tonight when she accepts her party's nomination. What do you think are her main goals, Anthony, and her main challenges?
Well, you know, this is nothing short of the most important speech of Hillary Clinton's political career that could determine whether she wins the election in November. So, you know, there's a little bit at stake tonight, I think it's fair to say. I mean, what she needs to do is really crystallize her vision and make clear where she wants to take this country. Yesterday, we heard a lot of reasons why not to vote for Donald Trump. We heard a really sort of eloquent defense of the Obama legacy from the president. But tonight, Clinton needs to state an affirmative case of why voters should support her, especially those independent voters who might be on the fence, and especially all those Americans who are really feeling insecure, left behind by an economy and a political system that isn't working for them. And all this has to be done by a politician who, it has to be said, hasn't always had the easiest time connecting viscerally with voters. So tonight is her big chance, and there's a lot at stake.
Mm. And you know, some of those voters who are on the fence are Bernie Sanders supporters. What do you think Hillary Clinton needs to do to try to seal the deal with them?
Well, right, and this is one of the big themes at the convention this week. What she needs to do is to acknowledge them, first of all, and then she really needs to go beyond doing that, beyond a sort of polite salute to them, or doing what Tim Kaine did last night when he said that everyone should feel the burn. I mean, she really needs to acknowledge the millions of people who are drawn to Sanders and to make a pitch that she will take their issues to heart if she makes it to the White House. And she has to do this because she really needs them. I mean, polls suggest that a majority of Sanders voters will vote for Clinton, but in a close election, she's going to need all of them. So here's Paul Feeney. He ran Sanders' campaign in Massachusetts. I spoke to him early this morning, and he talked about what Clinton needs to do.
She absolutely cannot discount the legions of people that have become a part of this process. There's a lot of folks across this country that feel like they found their voice in Senator Sanders. Secretary Clinton has to put out an olive branch to them and say that we need you.
You know, Anthony, Hillary Clinton is often talking about policy, and she's often very good at it as well. But it seems like a challenge for her tonight is going to be to try to reintroduce herself to the crowd as a person. How is she going to walk that line, do you think, between sort of policy wonk and approachable, warm person who can be a presidential candidate?
Yeah, well, I think that's the big challenge. You know, you've heard the line. It's been said that Hillary Clinton is the most famous politician who Americans don't know. Mm. She's cautious. She's reflexively political, as you suggested. She's a bit of a policy wonk, and you know, she can be quite compelling when she's talking about policy, but not necessarily funny or not necessarily connecting emotionally with people. So She sort of needs to find a way to do that. But this puts her in a bit of a bind, really, because, you know, this sort of need, this requirement to show her softer side, sort of subjects her, folks who are big fans of hers will say this is sort of subjecting her to a double standard. I mean, here's, for example, Casey Stino. She's chair of the Democratic Party of Alaska, talking about this challenge that Clinton faces.
I don't think anyone thinks Donald Trump is warm or fuzzy for a second. She's a leader. She is somebody, she's a boss. She gets it done. Saying that, I think she still has to overcome that, which makes things twice as hard for her. It's the being able to Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. Ginger Rogers had to do everything plus high heels backwards.
Right, and that statement, of course, was made as well last night by President Obama talking about Hillary Clinton's abilities, and she's going to have to really muster those tonight.
Hmm. So let's talk a little bit about President Obama's speech last night, his 44-minute-long speech. Here's an excerpt of what he said.
America is already great. America is already strong. And I promise you, our strength, our greatness, does not depend on Donald Trump.
Anthony, it sounded like the president got a very warm reception from the delegates last night. Is that what you heard as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's an understatement. This is one of the moments in the convention this week when this hall was just electrified and lit up. President Obama is still a very, very popular president among Democrats in particular, obviously. And you know, that speech did a couple of things. I mean, he weaved three things together: a defense of his record, some very effective attacks against Donald Trump while offering a really strong endorsement of Hillary Clinton. It was also an emotional speech, and there were tears in the auditorium because there was a real sense, and he said it, you know, that he's preparing to pass the baton to Hillary Clinton. I'm sure we're going to hear more speeches from President Obama before he leaves office, but there really was a feeling of, you know, this is the final sort of big stage speech from this president. And it was quite a moment here in Philadelphia. It really was. Mm.
Vice President Biden also spoke last night. His speech was really making a case to the middle class. What did you think of his presentation?
Well, you know, he's another sort of party favorite among sort of party regulars. And he really did deliver that sort of that great defense of the middle class and kind of went after Donald Trump that way at one point, you know, using this folksy language, but being really tough, saying, you know, Donald Trump says he cares about the middle class. You know, that's a bunch of baloney. You know, and that kind of sort of common sort of use of language gets a huge rise out of the crowd. Also, another very emotional moment. He began the speech recalling his son, Beau, who died of brain cancer, and really was very much, you know, among the chief reasons why Joe Biden didn't run for president this year. And so there was a sense of sort of sadness around that as well. But lots of popular support for him, lots of Joe signs waving in the air from the convention.
You know, earlier today we spoke with some Massachusetts lawmakers about the convention. They're at the convention. One of them was Congressman Joe Kennedy III. And we started our conversation with him by getting his take on party unity and what he thought of Michael Bloomberg's convention speech last night. And that was a particular point of that speech was when Bloomberg called Donald Trump a dangerous demagogue. Here's what Congressman Kennedy had to say.
An unequivocal rebuke to Donald Trump and how so far in this campaign, the vision that Donald Trump has put forth, the policies behind that vision, how he's actually going to execute that vision versus the experience, the judgment, the temperament, the capabilities of Secretary Clinton. It was a powerful moment to show that there are coalitions that are supporting Secretary Clinton that aren't necessarily the traditional Democratic one.
But what do you say to the critics who say that much of this convention is focused on being anti-Trump and is urging people to support Hillary because otherwise it's Trump? What do you say to that?
I'd say, look, the First Lady in her address Monday night didn't mention Donald Trump's name once. You heard, I think, Senator Sanders talk about the values and vision that drove his campaign and say that if you believe in those values and vision, then you have to vote for Hillary Clinton. I think you heard the president last night address the nation in a narrative about what drove his call to public service, what he has done in office, what we as a country have accomplished, and the fact that his administration, his campaign has been a bet on the American people to leverage the power and the energy and the passions of the American people to help solve their problems. That's what this election is about. That's what politics is about. That's what these campaigns are about. I think the big message coming out of this convention isn't vote for Hillary because she's not Trump. It's vote for an investment in our future and vote for a investment in our people, because we believe that as big as the challenges are out there, that the American people can solve them.
But do you think that Hillary Clinton is doing enough to bring in Sanders supporters and others with her policies, not just because of their opposition to Trump, but offering, you know, some reassurance that she would be their candidate and she would support many of the same policies that Bernie Sanders did?
I certainly think that there's been a coalescing behind Secretary Clinton over the course of the past several days. And the fact that there's still folks during that process that are upset and disappointed and disheartened, of course they are. The Democratic Party is a party that engages in debate, that wants diverse opinions, and we challenge each other through that. It's already, the feeling in the hall is much stronger even today than it was on Monday. And I think after Secretary Clinton has a chance to speak tonight, it will be even stronger.
So that's Congressman Joe Kennedy III, Anthony Brooks from the convention in Philadelphia. As you heard there, Congressman Kennedy disagrees about this idea that the convention's main pitch is stop Trump. What do you think about that and his assessment of sort of coalescing during this convention?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's take the second part first. I mean, I think it's fair to say that this party has come together. I mean, when it started, the big theme and the big question was the sort of fractious nature of the Sanders delegates. But, you know, by the time the roll call vote was taken on Thursday and the nomination and Hillary Clinton was nominated, there's really been a sense of unified purpose from a lot of the delegates. I mean, yes, there are pockets of Sanders supporters who are protesting and walking off the floor. We've seen them over in the media center. They've been collecting over there with tape over their mouths, suggesting that their voices aren't heard. But most of the delegates that I spoke to, the Sanders supporters, for example, yesterday I spoke to some of them in the Massachusetts delegation, and most of them are saying they're absolutely committed to vote for Hillary Clinton in the fall. And they really took to heart Sanders' message that the campaign, that there's sort of two parts to the coming campaign. There's the part leading up to the November election, and then once Hillary Clinton is elected, they say, then the second part of the campaign continues, and that is to continue pushing Bernie Sanders' progressive agenda. And I think most people now, by now, are buying into that.
And how about this idea that the convention is perhaps going too strongly in the direction of stop Trump?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I'll compare it to Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland, the Republicans in Cleveland, the messages coming out of there were so dark. I mean, it was of a nation in decline and in crisis. And, you know, you had people chanting, lock her up, lock her up. And by contrast, this convention is quite different. I mean, yeah, there was some pretty hard hits against Donald Trump yesterday. But you've had very uplifting speeches from people like Michelle Obama, who talked about, you know, when folks go low, we go high. You know, Bill Clinton sort of gave a wonderful home folksy speech about Hillary Clinton. So I tend to agree with Seth Moulton on this. You know, I think I mean, I'm sorry, with Congressman Kennedy.
Kennedy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that there has been a mix here, and there's been a lot of positive in it. You know, consider what we heard last night from President Obama, for example, which I know we're going to be talking about in a moment.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to be talking about Seth Moulton, because we did speak with him earlier today as well, also in Philadelphia. And as you probably remember, Congressman Moulton's been vocally opposed to how President Obama has handled things in Iraq. So we wanted to ask him about his support of former Secretary of State Clinton, despite his criticism. And we started our conversation with Congressman Moulton by asking him about this idea of stop Trump as one of the pushes at the convention, and here's what he had to say.
In Cleveland the other week, I mean, all we heard was anti-Clinton rhetoric, because there's no substance to what Donald Trump has to say. He doesn't even seem to have any policy, just a bunch of reckless ideas about embracing people like Vladimir Putin and Saddam Hussein, abandoning our allies across the globe. So in contrast to the Republicans, I think there's been a lot about what Secretary Clinton would do. And, you know, I'll give you a personal example. I mean, I've been frankly critical of the Obama administration on our handling of things in Iraq, because I've said that we have a military plan to defeat ISIS. We don't have a political plan to ensure the peace. Well, Secretary Clinton was a Secretary of State. I mean, she is a diplomat. She's exactly the kind of person that we need in the role of Commander-in-Chief.
But she was part of the Obama administration, obviously making that policy, that Iraq policy that you called a failed policy.
Well, actually, she often opposed the Obama administration on important things. So she was not someone who was just a go-along, get-along Secretary of State. I mean, she made some tough calls, including saying that we ought to do something about Syria back when it was very unpopular to even talk about Syria. And that's a tough thing to say. So she's not afraid to take on tough challenges. And she's someone that I would trust in that position, you know, speaking as a Marine veteran myself.
You know, after you did criticize President Obama's Iraq policy, there was a former State Department official who wrote in the Boston Globe an editorial who said that he had hoped for more from you. He said the U.S. does have a political strategy in Iraq, and the strategy being to have Iraq hold it together to help defeat ISIS, but there needed to be some willingness on the part of the Iraqis. How do you tell people, I'm not just backpedaling now because I want to see Hillary Clinton get elected?
Oh, no, no. I do disagree with that assessment. And I've had a good conversation with him about that piece that he wrote. You know, having Iraq hold together is a nice idea. That's not a strategy. Hope is not a strategy. We really have to have some plans in place to help them with the political unity that's required for them to hold together as a country, so we don't have to keep sending troops back there to clean up the mess as we're doing right now. And I was just in Iraq last week, actually, on a bipartisan delegation from the House Armed Services Committee to look at how the fight against ISIS is going. Quite frankly, my concerns were reaffirmed by that trip. And I was lucky to receive a call from Ambassador Crocker, who was the ambassador in Iraq during the surge. He said that I'm spot on with my criticisms. And I think that the Clinton team gets this, that we've got to do more diplomatically, not just militarily, in the Middle East. And in fact, diplomacy is the preference.
What do you say to folks who are concerned about threats like threats from ISIS and how a Clinton administration might deal with those so that fear is lessened?
Well, I say that these threats are real, and she has a strategy to make sure that we stay safe. She's going to stand by our allies, like our NATO allies, whom Donald Trump wants to abandon. She's going to stand up to our enemies. We heard yesterday about how she's not afraid to use military force if that's the last option, you know, including doing things like enforcing the Iran nuclear deal. So she has a serious, thoughtful strategy to keep America safe. Donald Trump has a bunch of erratic talking points and, frankly, treasonous statements that support our enemies.
That is Congressman Seth Moulton, who we spoke with earlier today. Anthony Brooks, our senior political reporter, who is in Philadelphia. There's a lot there in terms of what Congressman Moulton told us. But let's start first about foreign policy and Hillary Clinton's experience there. We heard President Obama mention that he feels that she is the most qualified person to serve as president, man or woman. Is this really resonating with the delegates, would you say?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think, and more importantly, I think this is a big issue for Clinton going forward into the fall campaign. I mean, it's one that she's going to use to really define a sharp contrast between her and Donald Trump. I mean, look, she was a former Secretary of State. You know, we heard Seth Moulton referring to Trump's treasonous statements. I mean, I don't think you can call them treasonous. He's allowed to say them. But, of course, he's referring to the fact that Trump essentially invited Russia to commit espionage to recover Clinton's lost emails. You know, he suggested requiring NATO allies to pay for protection and upending, 60 years of post-World War II order. So Clinton should be in a pretty good position to draw a stark contrast on this. I mean, this is in her wheelhouse. And I think we're going to see her using that in a big way. And if she plays the card correctly, you know, Donald Trump is making fear of ISIS a big, big issue in this campaign. It'll be a challenge for it'll be Clinton's challenge to sort of take that on, but talk about how to do it in a way that is knowledgeable, measured, presidential, and to convince voters, again, coming back to this issue, that she gets it, she understands the fear, and that she can sort of both make a, you know, a thoughtful policy statement, but also one that connects with voters' fears about the state of global affairs.
You know, I just want to, we're going to have to end with this because we're running out of time, but I just want to bring it up because you mentioned that Donald Trump asked Russia to try to locate Hillary Clinton's 30,000 missing emails, but today Trump said that he was only being sarcastic. Do you think that this will be just another blip of a misstatement on the part of Trump, or is this a bigger thing for the Trump campaign?
You know, I've given up trying to figure that question out because every time Trump makes one of these statements, we ask the question, and of course, implicit in the question is, how does a candidate for the highest office in the land get away with this stuff? But Donald Trump does and has, so I just don't really know how to answer the question, I guess, other than, you know, expect with Donald Trump, I think we've all learned to expect the unexpected.
But will it be different now that the Democrats have coalesced when Donald Trump makes statements like this?
Well, I think what's different, I mean, here's what I would say. I think Donald Trump was able to get away with these kinds of statements as he rallied sort of party loyalists and his loyalists leading up to his nomination. Now we're going to be, come Friday, in general election mode, and we'll see if that strategy continues to work for him. You know, I would say it's less certain. But again, predicting what is normal for Donald Trump or how it's going to work out is a risky business.
All right. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks at the Democratic National Convention. We'll see you tomorrow, Anthony.
Okay, Deborah, it's great talking to you.
You too. Stay with us. Coming up, Common Health's Carrie Goldberg tells us about the controversy surrounding long-term antibiotic treatment for Lyme disease. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.